tonight on Blackhawks Live. A new season, different faces, and the drive to win.
Jones, nice slot, fires, pants it, rebound, score! Connor Bedard, Donato to Nazar over the blue line, down the slot, he shoots, he scores! Frank Nazar on a breakaway!
Join Charlie Remiliotis as he dives into what's next for the Hawks. Here's Charlie.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
What an intro. Welcome into Blackhawks Live. Charlie Remiliotis here. Made it to the second show. We got a fun one planned tonight. We're going to analyze the Blackhawks' start to the season so far. They are 1-1-1, if you like round numbers or numbers straight through. And then earlier in the day, I interviewed Blackhawks TV play-by-play announcer Rick Ball. So that's going to air a little bit later on. Rick was so gracious with his time, and it was a fun conversation with him getting into his broadcasting background, and I think it will shed some light into the new voice of the Blackhawks. Riding shotgun with me today, Jack Heinrich. Jack, what's going on, man?
Hey, man, happy another show, week two. Yeah. Lots to talk about. Not a bad first three games, I guess, all things considered.
Yeah, let's get into it. So the opening night in Utah, it didn't go according to plan. At least the first 20 minutes seemed a little bit disastrous, and it felt like it was going to go downhill from there. They put up a little bit more of a competitive fight, ended up losing, but you know, it wasn't the best season opening game. Let's fast forward to the weekend, because that's where it feels like the meat happened. They lose a heartbreaker in Winnipeg. Basically became, they were 64 seconds away from recording a shutout victory, a 1-0 shutout victory in Winnipeg against a playoff type team, against one of the best goaltenders in the world, top three goalie in the world for sure. And it would have been Arvid Soderblom's first career NHL shutout. And given what he went through last year, that would have been a huge confidence booster for him. And then they give up the goal with a minute and 4 seconds left in regulation, then lose in overtime. And I got to be honest, Jack, it feels like Saturday's game in Edmonton, if that went poorly for the Blackhawks, the narrative changes around the team. And it's like they squandered the lead in Winnipeg. And then it was, you know, if Edmonton flexed their muscles and beat the Blackhawks, I think that it would be a lot different conversation today. But the Blackhawks bounce back, not just doing so with a win, they did it in a big way and outscoring Edmonton, you know, putting up a 5 spot and looking pretty decent doing it. So it feels like the Blackhawks kind of shut the door on the narrative from last season, at least for now. And so I thought that win over Edmonton was incredibly needed for this Blackhawks team early on for their confidence.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you, like, we played some of the audio from the post game on Friday. Ryan Donato and Seth Jones were just like, we're done with moral victories. And I mean, that was something 2 years ago they had a lot of with a very different team. And now this is a more veteran team. So I think even though it was the third game of the year, it was a very important game early on. And they came out and set the tone. They jumped up on Edmonton. And then I think the Hawks posted a clip on Twitter of the locker room after the game, and Foligno gave out the belt they give out, and he was just like, we bended and didn't break in the third period, which I think was big, especially against a team like that. And Edmonton, you know, they're going to keep coming after you and firing off shots, so they still got some things to clean up, but good thing going forward for them to at least get that win.
Yeah, by no means was it a perfect game for the Blackhawks in Edmonton. They did give up, I think I tweeted out, they gave up 91 shot attempts, which is the most they have allowed in a game since 2019, so almost 5 years ago. Ironically, the Blackhawks won that game too, 2-0. So I don't know if it doesn't sound like a recipe for success, but in the game, the Blackhawks did block 35 shots. So they got in lanes. They did what they could. Again, wasn't a perfect game, but I could have easily seen that game go a different way for the Blackhawks. And then through three games, we have the Utah game to go off of. We have the Winnipeg collapse, and then we have the Edmonton loss for the Blackhawks. And it would have been real tough for that locker room. But for them to bounce back, we've talked about it, about the Blackhawks wanting to take the next step in the rebuild. Part of that is being more competitive in games. The other part of that is shutting the door when they have leads, so protecting leads in third periods. And again, they were 64 seconds away from doing it in Winnipeg, so it wasn't one of, you know, last year it felt like the Blackhawks went into a third period and they gave up a lot of goals at the beginning of the periods. It was like, oh man, well,
just right off the bat.
And this one, it was like the Blackhawks went essentially 19 minutes shutting the door on Winnipeg, and then it was that one goal that, you know, unfortunately got by Soderblom, and then they lose in overtime. So I think the Blackhawks are trending in the right direction of doing a better job protecting leads, at least early on, that they, you know, protected the lead against Winnipeg, and then they did so, well, again, 19 minutes against Winnipeg. And then for Edmonton, Edmonton had two power plays in the third period.
Right.
And then they had, I think it was 3.5 minutes of 6-on-5 time. Mm-hmm. So it was basically almost half the period. The Blackhawks were basically killing an Edmonton Oilers power play of all teams. So again, they bent but didn't break. But I think that showed a lot of maturity by the Blackhawks. And that's a testament to the veterans in the locker room that they brought in.
Yeah, it's the next step in a rebuild is actually winning games. I mean, I think the last couple of years, they're okay with losing some games, and you could say, and Kyle Davidson said this year, it's like, we want to win more. So
right.
That's the next step, is you got to close out these games. And they have a lot of veterans now this year compared to other years. So they should have more, or should be better suited to do it with a couple young guys mixed in. But it is big for their conf. I mean, they go into Edmonton, they had a really bad game, like you were saying, before that. And they come in, I mean, they kind of threw the first punch, and then they were able to win. So that's a big win for them, especially because they're defending Western Conference champions. It's Connor McDavid, and Connor Bedard stepped up to the plate too. And he played really well. Him and Teravainen on that top line played very well, and that's what you need when you go on the road against those teams.
For sure. And the Blackhawks had an off day on Sunday, and it's my understanding they went on a little golf outing, so they did a little team bonding trip, and then they had practice today in Calgary, and then they got the game tomorrow. So that would have been a tough, if the Blackhawks lost in Edmonton, that would have been a tough few days for the Blackhawks to sit on the collapse in Winnipeg and then the follow-up loss in Edmonton. So good positive momentum for the Blackhawks to get that victory against Edmonton. Want to quickly talk about the power play. 3-for-3 against the Oilers. Didn't see that coming, because all preseason, the Blackhawks really struggled to generate chances. I mean, Jack, they couldn't even get set up in the offensive zone. It was
entries were tough.
It was really bad. And so for them to not only score on the power play, but for them to explode in the way they did, that's another big confidence boost for an area that has to be better this year.
Yeah, I mean, last year was just, I mean, the injuries hit, and then, I mean, losing Taylor Hall didn't help at that power play, but this year they got all the guys and on the top line, some of the other top guys, and surrounding Bedard and Teravainen, I mean, that it certainly looks different, and that's what you need to do, is take advantage of that stuff, because when the Hawks got the power play last year, it just felt like Troy was always saying, oh, they struggled to get entries, they didn't have any shots, you know, like, that's when you got to get, take advantage of those opportunities, is when you have that advantage, and they did that in the game. It's a big reason why they won.
Yeah, and on the flip side, the penalty kill has been excellent too, and typically for NHL teams, either one is going, but rarely both are going at the same time. It's like the power play is hot and the penalty kill is cold, or the penalty kill is hot and the power play is cold. Right now, well, at least in the Edmonton game, the power play went 3-for-3 and the penalty kill was solid. I think they gave up the one goal at the, I think it was Draisaitl, but leading up to that, for three games, the penalty kill has been awesome. So let's see if the Blackhawks can kind of marry the two together, and if they can put together a really respectable special teams this year, I feel like they can definitely take that next step, as long as they continue to get the goaltending that they're getting as well. So, all right, let's take a quick break. We got more to get to on Blackhawks Live. You're listening to 720 WGN. Welcome back to Blackhawks Live. Charlie Romeliotis here in our downtown WGN radio studio. Jack Heinrich riding shotgun with me. We have a Hawks Click poll that we put out on social media earlier today. Teuvo Teravainen, and he has 3 goals in 3 games so far for the Blackhawks. I was surprised to see that his career high going into this season was 25 goals, which he did last year. And so he's not known to be a huge goal scorer, but he is known to be a a pretty decent distributor of the puck, like a good playmaker. I remember talking to him during training camp. I asked him how much he's grown since the last time he's been here, and he thinks he's more of a he's a dependable two-way player. But the one thing that stood out to me, he was saying, I still think there's some offense hidden inside my game that I can channel that. So I'm curious, now that he's playing on a more of an offensive type role with the Blackhawks and playing on a line with Connor Bedard, and the fact that he has 3 goals in three games already, he's on pace for 82, Jack. I don't know if he's going to get there, but we put out the poll. Teravainen's career high for goals in a season is 25. How many goals will he finish with this season? So we have 15 or fewer. We have 16, between 16 and 23, between 24 and 20, or 24 and 31, or 32 or more. I'll throw it over to you, Jack.
I put my vote in the 24 to 31, and I'm pushing more towards that 31, I think, basically on the reasons you said. I mean, he's probably going to be on the top line or the second line. If he plays with Bedard, I mean, I think he could do big things, and he's going to be on the power play too. So I think he's going to push more towards that, maybe a new career high, but I like what I've been seeing from him so far.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in that range too, although I don't know. So I was looking at Money Puck. I like Money Puck as a site to kind of look at, you see, like, expected goals and, mm-hmm. and how. So last year, Teravainen's expected goals, he was at 17.2. His actual goals were 25. So he got a little bit of puck luck. But here's where I agree with you and why I think it's going to be. So my prediction, I think he's going to be at 28. So he's just going to fall short of 30, but he's in between that 24 to 31 range. And the reason why is, I'm looking at his average time on ice with Carolina last season. It was 16.24. That's not particularly on the high end for forwards. I mean, it's kind of like second line, third line.
Right.
Through three games, he's averaging 18.04 with the Blackhawks. So he's getting like a full minute and a half plus per game. And like you mentioned, so with Carolina, Teravainen was playing with better players.
Right.
But here, he's playing in a larger role, and he gets Connor Bedard on his wing. So I agree. I think he's going to get, you know, again, he already has 3 through 3 games, so it's easy for me to kind of go to the 28 mark, knowing that he's got a little bit of a head start. But just the amount of ice time that he's going to get, plus likely playing with Connor Bedard, both at 5-on-5 and on the first power play unit, it feels like he can flirt with 30.
Yeah, and I think that would be what the Hawks are hoping for too. Is like even though they want to be more competitive, it's still about who's going to play with Bedard in the future. And they locked up Teravainen for a couple of years, so if he can build that good chemistry with him, and then like it gives you even more options. So, yeah, I think this is great. I mean, he is only 30 still, and he's been in the NHL for 12 years, so he could still unlock some offensive potential as well.
Yeah, and you look at his point totals too, 64, 76, 63, 65, and then last year he scores a career high 25 goals and he puts it up with 53. Like, I mean, he's a four-time 60-point producer in this league, and that's fairly significant when it comes to adding that point production to the Blackhawks, because last year they just did not have
no
offensive scoring outside of Connor Bedard. This year, I mean, I think they were hoping that Lucas Reichel can be that second line guy. They were hoping that Andreas Athanasiou, now that he's healthy, because he missed him most of last season with the groin injury, could provide some second line scoring in addition to Philip Kurashev, who I think has been solid in that second line center role for now. But it still feels like the Blackhawks are offensively, it's going to be the first line, Bedard and Teravainen, and if they're not producing, the Hawks are going to have a little bit of a hard time finding secondary scoring. So you really hope that Bedard and Teravainen can continue building on their chemistry, because it's going to be an important part of the equation for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, some of the things last year, I mean, Bedard, like with the injuries and moving on in and out, it was hard to, for, I mean, they're trying to fix up, just throw a bunch of guys out there,
right.
Really. So I think this will help too. Like Bedard was, even just like getting players who can think kind of high level like Teravainen can. So like sometimes I remember Bedard would throw a pass and a guy wasn't really ready for it or expecting it. And Teravainen's been a guy that's been around the league for a while, so they could play off each other a little bit there, and whoever's going to be on the line with him. I mean, now they already threw Foligno back up there, so, and we saw that with Bedard a little bit last year, him and Foligno. So, yeah, I think he's, everyone was really excited when he came back, and he's come back a lot more mature, and it's been paying off so far in three games.
Right. We mentioned secondary scoring. I didn't even mention Taylor Hall, who's now fully healthy, and Tyler Bertuzzi, who's had a quiet start to the season. I think we can all agree. It's not something. He actually started slow last year as well with Toronto. I think he had only 3 points in his first 12 games, and he was averaging more in like the 15, 16 minutes of ice time. So he wasn't really getting offensive production early on, but the second half of the season, Bertuzzi really solidified himself as an important piece of the Toronto Maple Leaf. So we'll see if Teravainen can try to, or if Bertuzzi can try to turn the tide early on. All right, we're gonna take a break. We got Blackhawks TV play-by-play announcer Rick Ball. He joins us next. Great interview with him. Love talking with Rick. And you're listening to Blackhawks Live on 720 WGN. The news is next. Back here on Blackhawks Live, Charlie Meliotis here. Earlier today, I caught up with new Blackhawks TV play-by-play announcer, Rick Ball. All right, Rick. Well, it's fitting to have you on here because the Blackhawks have the Calgary Flames next on the schedule Tuesday, your former stomping grounds. But I also want to get you on this early in the season as an intro to Chicago fans. So I figured this will kind of be a get to know Rick Ball kind of interview. Sound good to you?
That sounds good. Yeah. Maybe I'll find out a few things about myself.
First off, how's it feel to be back home? It's kind of awesome that the schedule lined up this way where you can be home for a few days for Canadian Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it worked out really well. We played in Edmonton on Saturday night and then took that very short flight about 20 minutes back to Calgary right after the game. So couple of days off, went to practice and game day tomorrow. But other than that, it's been a chance to, you know, say hello to family and friends and get back into the, you know, the house and sleep my own bed for a bit. I still have a place in Calgary. We'll get that all settled out next year. But for the time being, it's just me by myself in Chicago. So this is a real nice bonus to the early portion of the schedule. Like, not only get back home, terms of coming back to Calgary, but to do it with a couple of days off doesn't happen very often. So the timing was perfect. And as you mentioned, Canadian Thanksgiving. So it's all coming together.
I love it. You had a couple preseason games to kind of get your feet underneath you here in Chicago, three regular season games in. Are you feeling settled into the new role, the new routine with the Blackhawks?
100%. You know, Darren Pang is such a pro and so easy to work with. And, you know, I feel like we've got a pretty good feel for each other's rhythm, and that's the toughest part when you have a new partner, is just learning the cadence and how they like to talk and when they like to speak and when they don't like to, and vice versa. So that seemed to come real natural between the two of us. So that part was easy. And, you know, the guys behind the scenes, all the important people that work, you know, in the production studio, they've been just terrific. So, you know, it's only going to get better as we all get more comfortable with each other. It's always different when you're incorporating somebody new into the show. But, you know, I'm pretty happy with the way everything's gone, and everybody's just a real pro and terrific to work with. So then you combine that with a pretty good start for the Hawks, and it's all been positive. I mean, I love Chicago. I've said this to everybody who's asked me about it. It, you know, it was my favorite city on the circuit to visit when I was coming there, whether I was working in Vancouver or working in Calgary, and now a chance to live there and be a resident of the city. And, you know, my impressions of it have only gotten better now that I'm there. So that part is terrific. The actual work part has been fantastic, and we're only a few games in, so I can only imagine it gets better from here. And, you know, hopefully the Hawks are a better team than many expect them to be on the ice. They certainly look like it right now. I've been very impressed with the way they've played in all three games, even though they only have the one win. I think they've played some very sound, structured hockey, and that's very encouraging.
For sure. You talk about the importance of on-air chemistry. What was your relationship like with Darren Pang before this? Did you, obviously he's a household name, both broadcaster and we know from his playing days, especially here in Chicago. And how did your relationship with him, was it easy to pick up right away on the air? Because it feels like he's really easy to work with.
he's very easy because he's so good at his job. But I mean, we knew each other. You know all the guys, right, that do the same jobs on the circuit because you see each other at least a couple of times every year, if not more. But I didn't know him really well beyond that. So it was been a matter of getting to know him a little bit more on a deeper level, because he's been a real nice connection to the city of Chicago. Even though it's only his second year back as an analyst, he spent a lot of time there as a player, and then his initial, you know, the start of his career as a broadcaster as well. So he's got a lot of connections to the city, and it's really nice to have that just in terms of meeting people and, you know, showing he's been a tour guide for me. So that part of it has been terrific. And on top of that, he's just an outstanding guy and, you know, really wants to get people together and introduce people to other people. So one of those connectors, as they like to say. And, you know, it's really nice to have him there, because I've come to places where I didn't have that, and it's a little trickier to kind of get your foot in the door and get to meet some people. So he's been great that way. So I guess to get back to the first part of your question, we knew each other, but it wasn't like we were great friends or anything. And, you know, that part of it's been developing, and, you know, I can tell that we're going to get along great both on the air and off of it. And that's a real nice dynamic to have. I was really fortunate in Calgary. I worked mainly with Kelly Rudy, and we did have a little bit of a relationship from before that, because we'd done some couple of years on Hockey Night in Canada. And way back when I had a radio show in Vancouver, he was a regular guest of mine. So we had a relationship that went back a long time. But we became really good friends doing the Flames over a 10-year period. And, you know, he's one of my best friends now still. So, you know, when you have that kind of relationship with your broadcast partner off the air, it just makes the work on the air that much easier. And I've had a lot of great partners, and I can tell Darren Pang's going to be another one of them. You know, Greg Millen was a regular I worked with a lot. He's terrific at his job and a great guy away from it as well. So, you know, you spend more time with each other off the air than you do on. You travel so much. There's a ton of hours where you're just around. And, you know, there are shows and, you know, and broadcasters who are partners on the air who don't get along off of it. I can't imagine being in, you know, a situation like that. And it just means so much to be able to work with a guy who's such a pro and also a good person.
Did you always want to be a play-by-play guy as a kid, or when did that passion get instilled in you?
Yeah, I never thought about it in those terms. It, you know, just little things along the way kind of pushed me in a certain direction. I love sports and played everything I could. You know, I was a half-decent athlete. I wasn't great. I knew it wasn't going to get me anywhere in terms of, you know, a college scholarship, let alone playing pro. That was never going to happen. So, you know, through a series of weird circumstances, I kind of got interested in broadcasting. And in Kelowna, B.C., which is where I grew up, a small city in the interior of the province, the custodian at my high school was an old hockey coach, junior hockey coach, who just happened to be the analyst on the local junior hockey radio broadcast. And he sort of got wind that I was interested in broadcasting and introduced me to the play-by-play guy, a guy named Brian Cooling, who was also the sports director. And Brian took a liking to me, and next thing you know, I was filing reports to the radio station from basketball tournaments I was playing in, and they'd run them on the air, and I thought, that's kind of cool. So it really did kind of whet my appetite to do it. I did that for a couple years at the end of my high school run, and then, you know, first year of college did it, and then that sort of got me into a broadcasting school in Vancouver, very good school. They have an excellent broadcast program at a school called the BC Institute of Technology. Went there, came back to Kelowna, and wound up working for that same radio station, my first full-time job. And then I started to get interested in play-by-play. So I never really thought about it as specifically being a play-by-play guy. I just wanted to be a broadcaster. And that part of it kind of came once I started working full-time. And I was just part of the morning show, and, you know, the zany morning show. You come on the air, read the sports, and goof around with the DJ. And I kind of thought, you know, I covered a bunch of games just as a reporter. I thought, you know, I'd love to try a play-by-play, and finally convinced the manager of the station to let me do it. And once I tried it, I was hooked. Like the first game I did, I thought I got the bug immediately. And I thought, this is the path I want to follow. And I was, at that point, it was a singular focus of mine. And but that was a few years into my career before I started to think that way.
That's awesome. Who are some of the guys, the play-by-play announcers that you looked up to or tried to emulate as a kid or when you did get that passion?
Two specifically, and it's interesting because they're really stylistically not that similar, but it's the two guys I grew up listening to. There was the radio voice of the Vancouver Canucks. His name is Jim Robson, and he is terrific, and he's in the Hall of Fame. And back in the day when I was a kid, not all the games were on TV, so you listen to bulk of the games on the radio. So to me, Jim Robson was the Vancouver Canucks. I remember being a kid and laying in bed listening to games on the radio before I fell asleep. And, you know, he was a big part of my life as a sports fan. So Jim Robson was one. And then Bob Cole was the other one. The late, great Bob Cole just passed away not that long ago. And, you know, he was the voice of every big game, all the Stanley Cup finals for years and years and years at CBC on television. So, you know, and Bob and Jim were different stylistically, but I probably, you know, when you first start, you're sort of mimicking the people you listen to. And I probably stole a bit from both. And then over time, you develop your own style. So those two guys were clearly the biggest influences. And I got a chance to meet both of them. I met Jim early on in my career, and he's such a sweet man and was very helpful in terms of advice. And I got to meet Bob a little bit later when I started working for Hockey Night in Canada. And that was a real honor because I just thought he was the greatest. So, you know, the chance to listen to guys growing up who I think are amongst the best to ever do it and then get to meet them later on was really special. So those are the two guys for me that had the biggest impact in terms of my career.
One thing I've noticed in your own play-by-play, just listening to you and watching you, you don't really have like a signature call where you always resort to a specific call on a goal or a big save. It's always different. Is that something you take pride in, where you just kind of react to what you see in the moment and not go resort to like something that's easy to say because it's just a signature?
It's there, yeah. It's intentional. You know, I don't. And I'm not knocking guys who have those signature calls. You know,
sure.
It's just a style choice of mine. I like the guys who just kind of capture the moment, like let it happen, right? So that's been my approach. Those are the people that I've always enjoyed listening to. Hey, listen, there's lots of guys who are completely opposite stylistically from me who I think are great. I always compare it to music, right? You know, you have a jazz guitar player. Pat Metheny is at one end of the spectrum and Eddie Van Halen's at the other. Now, they're totally different in how they play, but they're both great. And I think of it that way, too, with broadcasters. So there's not a right or wrong answer. It's just how you sort of choose to do it. And it's a conscious choice I made a long time ago when I first started to kind of do it that way. And that might be more the Jim Robson influence for me. He was that kind of a guy, the Canucks radio guy for all those years. So that part of it probably was more of an influence of the way he called games than anything else.
Is there a call that stands out to you in your career when you kind of think you're like, man, I really nailed that one?
The one that stands out to me is, you know, Johnny Gaudreau, God rest his soul, scoring that Game 7 overtime winner against Dallas a few years ago in Calgary at the Saddle Dome. I could have done a few things better, but that one I really laid out. I called it, but the building went nuts, and I thought, I'm not going to walk all over the energy. You could just feel it. So, you know, there's a point where I thought, what can I say that's going to top what we're seeing and hearing from the crowd? And I wish maybe I would have said a little more, but that to me, just in terms of the moment, was the biggest one. You know, it was a great game in a great series. The Flames looked like they're going to be snookered by Jake Ottinger, who was having an unbelievable performance between the pipes for Dallas. I think it was still the best numeric in terms of stats, the best playoff series by a goalie in the history of the playoffs. It was unbelievable. And then they finally solved him in overtime at home in Game 7. So just in terms of what was on the line, that one sticks out to me. The most fun I think I had calling a game, there was a Halloween game in Nashville a few years ago where the Flames scored a goal with literally 1/10 of a second left on the clock. Matthew Tkachuk scored it. You can't score any later and win, right? Or have a count. Like it was, so it was a crazy game, and it was the most physical game I've seen in a regular season game in years. Milan Lucic was running around doing his thing. It was just a nuts game, and the Flames came from behind, and then Tkachuk scores an overtime winner with a shot between his legs from the top of the faceoff circle. So that was a lot of fun, just because it had that kind of a dynamic with the physicality and a late goal and a crazy goal to win it in overtime. So in terms of calling a game, that one sticks out to me as maybe the most fun broadcast I've ever had a chance to do.
Last one for you. I loved your call on Connor Bedard's first goal, Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday against Connor McDavid and the Oilers. Pretty fitting.
Yeah.
You know, how much are you looking forward to watching him getting a front row seat? And hopefully you'll be calling many, many more of his goals in his career.
I'm thrilled, you know, and I just watching him this year. I only saw him in person once last season because they played the Flames three times, but Bedard was injured for two of them. So the only game I saw was the last one they played late in the season. I watched obviously a ton of him on TV, but you don't get as good an impression as when you start seeing a guy in person. I'm even more impressed now that I've watched him in person. I think he's better this year too. I think he's made a conscious effort to work on his deficiencies. We all, you know, Charlie, you're at every practice. He's out there in 20 minutes after everybody else has left the ice. That guy is not lacking for work. You know, he's going to put in the hours to try and get better at every aspect of his game. And he strikes me as the kind of player who's going to work on his weaknesses harder than anything else. And I think I'm seeing a young guy who's just the improvements are coming, you know, just not that there were a ton of weaknesses. He was a great 18-year-old, but, you know, his overall game. Like, the thing that impressed me about that game at Edmonton is he rose to the occasion. You're going head-to-head against the best player in the world in Connor McDavid. It's a Hockey Night in Canada game. The spotlight's on. And I think Connor Bedard was the best player on the ice. He outplayed McDavid. You know, that said a lot to me about his character, that he was able to do that. Some guys fold, right? Under that spotlight and that pressure, you might, you know, it gets to him. He rose to the challenge. And as a guy who's going to call Hawks games for a long time, hopefully, that was the most exciting thing about what happened on the weekend in Edmonton. And I just think the sky's the limit for this guy. You know, he's still a kid. So imagine once he's physically filled out into more of a man body, look out. It's going to be incredible.
And some guys go their entire careers hoping to get a Hockey Night in Canada towel, and he already got it in year two.
Hey, I worked for Hockey Night in Canada for 13 years. I didn't get one. Now,
man.
I never played. But it was funny because Tanger was showing me the picture, and I said, yeah, I got it. I should have still, but they guard those things, though, like gold, right? Because they only have a handful of them. I tried to steal one from Scott Oak a few times because you can't have it, so.
Well,
I'm going to have to see if I can reach out and get one.
Yeah, you definitely deserve one. Rick, thank you so much for doing this. I told you this off the air, too, but I think I speak for the entire city of Chicago in saying that this market is very lucky to have you. So we're glad to have you here. Good luck the rest of the season, and go enjoy a happy Canadian Thanksgiving dinner.
That's right, Charles. Thank you very much for the kind words, by the way. I'm just as happy to be in Chicago. I love the city. I'm settling in now as a resident. You know, the people there are wonderful, and the Hawks fans are great. So thanks a lot. I appreciate it. And anytime you need me on the air, give me a call.
You're the man. Thank you, Rick.
Hey, Charlie. Take care, buddy.
Back here on Blackhawks Live. Thanks to Rick Ball for that interview. Want to do a quick around the NHL storyline. The top storyline, the Edmonton Oilers, the reigning Western Conference champions, are 0-3 now to start the season. They are being outscored 15-3. And I will say this about the Oilers. They're my Stanley Cup pick. I'm still riding or dying with them. But I think when you go to a Stanley Cup, the winner feels the hangover around December, January, February. And the loser of the Stanley Cup final, they feel the hangover right out of the gate because they don't have the benefit of having the ring on their fingers. And so I'm not surprised that Edmonton is off to a slow start. I think they're going to turn it around. I'm still sticking with my Stanley Cup pick because they are legit. And Connor McDavid, go watch that Amazon series. I'm not betting against him. All right, that's going to do it for Blackhawks Live. Thanks for hanging out with us. Blackhawks versus Flames on Tuesday to wrap up a season opening 4-game road trip in Calgary. We got the pregame show tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. right here on 720 WGN. We'll talk to you then.